This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran busts several Israeli spy networks, arresting agents who had plotted to assassinate an Iranian military official and conduct acts of sabotage. Russia says it's working on extra measures to limit discounts on its oil in response to a price cap imposed by the West on its energy. The British government introduces legislation to curb the strikes that decision unions have described as undemocratic and unworkable. This is news. Coming your way from our Tehran studios with me, your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Iran's Minister of Intelligence says it's identified and arrested members of six teams affiliated with the Israeli spy agency. The Mossad agents were plotting to assassinate an Iranian military official and conduct acts of sabotage in Iran. According to the ministry's support network for the Mossad agents was also busted, and more than a dozen of their members were arrested. The ministry also said the mastermind operation was based in a European country, adding that Mossad was trying to use the recent rioting in Iran to carry out its operation. Tehran has said time and again that the recent riots in the country was a plot by Israel and its Western allies. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has censured controversial French weekly Charlie Hebdo for publishing cartoons of the religious and political authority in Iran. Hezbollah called on the French government to take firm measures to punish the perpetrators, and that after the cartoons triggered outrage in Iran. The country has witnessed rallies in different cities over the past days. The foreign ministry also summoned the French ambassador to protest the caricatures and closed the cultural wing of the French embassy in Tehran. Charlie Hebdo's attack on the religious and political authority in Iran follows the magazine's sacrilege against the Prophet of Islam a few years ago that fueled anger across the Muslim world. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians have held a sit-in in solidarity with prisoners in Israeli jails. Resistance groups also holding a workshop for prisoners on how to tackle the fierce attacks against inmates by the newly formed right-wing Israeli cabinet. Ashraf Shannon reports.
Families of prisoners and their advocates have staged a sit-in inside the office of the International Committee of the Red Cross in the blockaded Gaza Strip on Monday. Their action was in solidarity with thousands of Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails and detention centers. Tel Aviv practices apartheid policies against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, and Al-Quds. Among those apartheid policies is the bad treatment of Palestinian prisoners.
The prisoners are suffering tremendously inside Zionist jails, and we pray for their release. My son was only 17 when he was arrested and has been behind bars since 1992. He's a freedom fighter who fought for the liberation of Al-Quds and Palestine.
Palestinian prisoners who are held in 24 Israeli jails and detention centers are all denied basic human rights.
Prisoners' advocacy groups are calling on the international community to hold the Israeli regime accountable for its grave violations against Palestinian prisoners.
Meanwhile, a workshop was held in the blockaded territory on how to tackle the dangers posed by right-wing Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir on Palestinian prisoners. The workshop was organized by Hamas's Wa'id Prisoners Society and the Islamic Jihad's Mujahid al-Quds Foundation for Prisoners. Attendees discussed ways of confronting threats by the extremist Israeli minister.
It's our duty to protect and fight for Palestinian prisoners amid the ongoing attempts by Ben-Gvir and the Zionist entity to pass a law that allows the execution of Palestinian prisoners, as well as the deportation of Palestinian prisoners. We are facing a big Zionist project, targeting not only the prisoners, but also all aspects of Palestinian existence.
For decades, the Israeli regime has violated all the rights and freedoms granted to prisoners by the Fourth Geneva Convention.
The issue of Palestinian prisoners is at the core of the Palestinian cause. They are held in Zionist jails because they fought for the freedom of Palestine and have kept the Palestinian cause alive. Palestinian prisoners have played a major role in fighting the Zionist project that aims to empty Palestine of its indigenous Palestinian population.
Palestinians are calling on the international community to break their silence and help Palestinian prisoners. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Now, Russia is working on extra measures to limit discounts on its oil in response to the price caps imposed by the West. The Russian energy minister says it will apply monitoring procedures to implement the additional measures. Such discounts are traditionally there for international benchmarks like Brent, but they widen amid Western sanctions on Moscow. Russia has already reacted to the $60 ceiling imposed on its oil price by the West. President Vladimir Putin has signed a decree that prohibits the supply of crude and oil products to nations that abide by the European price cap. The order will take effect on February 1st and will stay effective for 5 months. The British government has introduced a bill to Parliament designed to curb the impact of the strikes over pay that continue to paralyze services across the country.
So I'm introducing a bill that will give government the power to ensure that vital public services will have to maintain a basic function by delivering minimum safety levels, ensuring that lives and livelihoods are not lost. Mr. Speaker, we're looking at six key areas, each of them critical for keeping the British people safe and society functioning. These are health, education, fire, rescue, transport, border security, and nuclear decommissioning. We do not want to use this legislation, but we must ensure the safety of the British public. During the passage of the bill, we intend to consult on what an adequate level of coverage looks like in fire, ambulance, and in rail services.
Now, unions have described the bill as undemocratic and unworkable, urging the lawmakers to reject it. The bill will not be debated on Tuesday and could take months to become law. The opposition Labour Party has said it would repeal the law if it comes to power in a national election expected next year. Britain is experiencing a wave of industrial actions, but workers demanded wages in tandem with rising inflation, which now around 40-year highs. Nurses, ambulance staff, and rail workers are among those who have staged walkouts. So far, talks between the government and the trade unions have failed to produce a breakthrough. The latest data from the European Union's Climate Monitoring Service shows the last 8 years have been the warmest on record globally. According to the Copernicus Climate Change Service, a series of unprecedented natural disasters, likely by climate change, made 2022 the fifth warmest year since modern record-keeping began. The data shows Europe as a whole saw the highest increase in temperature, with France, Britain, Spain, and Italy setting new average records. Scorching heat across Europe, coupled with drought, led to thousands of deaths and intense wildfires in countries from Spain to Slovenia, unleashing extensive amounts of emissions. The European Climate Agency has also highlighted other parts of the world that endured heat wave and its impacts. It says flooding in Pakistan affected 33 million people, while drought devastated livestock in Somalia. The Brazilian president has condemned as acts of terrorism the Sunday attacks on the presidential palace, the Congress, and the Supreme Court. Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva made the condemnation after meeting with leaders of the House of Congress and a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. In a joint statement, they denounced what they called terrorist acts and coup-mongering vandalism committed by rioters. The raids were carried out by thousands of supporters of former President Bolsonaro. The aim was to overthrow President Lula's government that took office a week ago. In response, hundreds of people held a protest in Sao Paulo, demanding punishment for the rioters.
Totally absurd. It's the worst moment in our history after the 1964 coup that established a dictatorship. I think everyone was appalled by the images we saw in the National Congress. The fight is now to support a government that was democratically elected, and we are not going to leave the streets.
The raids on Brazil's institutions are being compared with the storming of the U.S. Capitol in 2021 by supporters of former President Trump. Brazil's communication minister says, however, the attacks on Brasilia were more severe. Authorities have arrested at least 1,500 people and vowed to bring the organizers to justice. Condemnations also pouring in. One of the latest came from Venezuela, where the president called the rioters new Nazis and denounced their assault. Iran's foreign ministry also expressed concerns about developments in Brazil and called for respect for the rule of law. Now, we've talked to podcaster and journalist Esha Krishnaswamy and asked her if she sees any similarity between the violence in Brazil and the Capitol riot in the United States.
Superficially, yes. As in, superficially, they stormed the Congress, the Supreme Court of Brazil, and also the presidential palace, and there's a lot of aesthetics. But I see it as far more dangerous, just because we know that in what they did in Congress in 2021 was not likely to result in any change of power. But here we saw that the police and many members of the federal police actively aided the rioters. And also the governor of Brasilia, Mr. Rocha, was sacked recently because he participated in organizing these riots. So while superficially they look similar, I think this, even Lula agrees, the situation in Brazil is far more dangerous than anything that could have happened in the U.S.
At least 17 people, including two teenagers, have been killed in the latest round of clashes between anti-government rallies and the police in Peru. The toll makes Monday the deadliest single day of protests since they began a month ago. The violence also left 68 people wounded. Clashes erupted in the southern city of Juliaca. Peru's Human Rights Office has urged the police to abide by international standards in using force. The anti-government rallies resumed last week after a holiday lull and have so far left more than three dozen people dead. Protesters are calling for early elections, the resignation of a new president, and the closure of Congress. They also demand the release of ousted President Pedro Castillo. He was arrested after removal from office in December. Over 7,000 American nurses in New York have staged a strike protesting harsh work conditions and staffing policies. Striking nurses rallied outside two hospitals in the Bronx and Manhattan. They waved signs in support of hiring more nurses and better pay. The walkouts forced health centers to move patients and scaled back other services. This after authorities failed to reach an agreement with the nurses' representatives. The COVID pandemic has exacerbated nursing shortage in the United States. Many of them have left long-standing jobs for higher-paying short-term assignments. Earlier, we're joined by a U.S. correspondent, Colin Campbell, to get a better picture of the strike in nurses' working conditions.
Well, the strike was organized by the New York State Nurses Association. This is a group of nurses that have come together that advocate their own interests. And what nurses are saying is that they are stressed out, quite frankly. They are overworked and they are tired. So approximately 7,000 nurses went on strike in New York, and they called to the attention for some of the subpar conditions in which they've been forced to work in. What does that include? Well, you have nurses that are caring for several infants at a time, when usually it's regulated that when a baby is born, they are paired up with a nurse, meaning one-to-one, very specialized care. Well, now nurses are saying that they have to attend to three to four babies at a time. This could mean administering medication, making sure that they're calmed down, making sure their diapers are changed. And as you can imagine, these nurses are working overtime or working much more than they should be working. And they also say that because of the lack of nurses that some New York area hospitals have failed to hire, they are working even more when it comes to emergency room situations. And that could mean subpar care for patients. Instead of someone coming in and getting attentive care right away, they may be delayed. Or maybe a patient who's already been admitted may have delayed medication coming to them because that nurse is busy attending to someone else. So what they're saying is they need more nurses. They want hospitals in the area to hire more people and to make pay more competitive so more nurses will be attracted to those jobs, and that their jobs, the nurses who are already there, their jobs will be a bit easier, and they can do them with a bit more quality.
Russia is slamming France and other Western states for the recent decisions to ramp up military support for Kiev, warning that such measures could deepen the sufferings of the Ukrainians. The Kremlin spokesman has stressed that Western arm deliveries cannot and will not change anything on the ground. Dmitry Peskov says that such moves would not deter his country from achieving its goals either. Last week, France and Germany announced they would send light combat vehicles, including tanks, to Kiev to help it fight Russia. Ukraine, that scored some battlefield gains in recent months, had asked its Western backers for heavier weaponry. Moscow has repeatedly warned that Western leaders are prolonging the conflict by providing weapons to Ukraine. The peace activist Daniel Kovalik says that U.S.-led NATO is pursuing its own hegemonic agenda at the expense of the Ukrainian people.
The U.S. and NATO don't care about Ukraine or the Ukrainian people. You know, people like Senator Lindsey Graham have said that the Ukrainians will fight the Russians to the last Ukrainian. And I think in the end, what really is the truth is that NATO will fight Russia to the last Ukrainian, that Ukraine's being sacrificed on the altar of U.S. hegemony. And I do think that the weapons the NATO is sending will not change the outcome of the war, but will extend the war and cause more suffering to the Ukrainians and Russians alike. I think, sadly, the war will continue into the summer of 2023, and I think the outcome will most likely be that Ukraine will be divided up at least into two parts, if not more, because I think, you know, the eastern part at least will end up as part of Russia. And I think Poland and or Hungary may take parts of the West. I think in the end, Ukraine will not exist as a country in the way that it has. And again, I think that could have been avoided through negotiations, but the West has not allowed it to happen. The problem is Zelensky is not in charge. He is a client of the United States, and the U.S. is calling the shots here.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Balkan Cancer.
Hadžići is a small town near Sarajevo. In former Yugoslavia, one of the three largest factories for the overhaul of infantry weapons and armored vehicles, the Technical Repair Institute, was built in Hadžići. During NATO bombing of Bosnia and Herzegovina, most of the depleted uranium bombs were thrown on Hadžići. Nobody knew that NATO planes were using depleted uranium ammunition in the attacks on Hadžići. Nobody. Until the signing of the Dayton Peace Agreement, by which a ceasefire of the three-year war in Bosnia and Herzegovina was signed, a predominantly Serb population used to live in Hadžići. After the signing of the Dayton Peace Agreement, the Serbian forces left Hadžići. Most of the inhabitants of Hadžići that were of Serbian nationality left with them. They settled in the town of Bratunac, near the Bosnian-Serbian border. Then the mass dying of the immigrated Serbs from Hadžići to Bratunac began. Four times higher was the mortality of the immigrated Serbs from Hadžići to Bratunac compared with the native inhabitants of Bratunac. depleted uranium started to take its blood toll. People began to die of cancer on a large scale. Jelena Djurkovic now lives in Bielina, where she immigrated in 1992, immediately after the beginning of the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Her brother, Vujadin Popovic, was sentenced to life imprisonment by the ICTY for the crimes done in Srebrenica. From 2003 to 2007, Jelena Djurkovic was a member of the Parliament of Bosnia and Herzegovina in Sarajevo. At her own initiative, a commission was formed which had to examine the consequences of NATO bombing of Bosnia and Herzegovina with depleted uranium. The commission formed by Jelena Djurkovic confirmed that ammunition with depleted uranium was used on the territory of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Today, there is only one copy of that report. That is the one that is in possession of Jelena Djurkovic. There are no documents for the work of this commission in the archives of the Parliament of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Alfred Vidic of the Institute of Public Health of the Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina confirms that on the territory of Hajici there are still remnants of that ammunition with depleted uranium. Twenty years ago, for the first time, the silver bullet, as the inhabitants of Bosnia used to call the ammunition with depleted uranium, was used in the military conflicts in the Balkans. NATO generals were satisfied with the overall trial results. The depleted uranium became a part of everyday life in the Balkans in the years that followed. From the 23rd till the 25th of April in 1999, the 16th summit of NATO member states was held in Washington, D.C. NATO celebrated 50 years since its establishment. Already for a month, the war had raged in Kosovo and NATO bombing of Yugoslavia was ongoing. On the 50th anniversary of NATO, the Americans and Bill Clinton wanted a big win against Slobodan Milosevic. That was very important for the United States President Bill Clinton, since his rating was seriously threatened after the affair with Monica Lewinsky. The Americans were preparing for a long period for the war against Slobodan Milosevic. Several years before the war, the Balkan headquarters of the CIA was moved from Belgrade to the capital city of Bulgaria, Sofia. The Bulgarian Prime Minister, Ivan Kostov, and the head of the General Staff of the Bulgarian Army, General Miho Mihov, were called for urgent consultations at the NATO headquarters in Brussels. Bulgaria was one of the two countries whose territories were used by NATO planes in order to bomb Yugoslavia. Two options were possible: Belgrade and Yugoslavia to be bombed from the Incirlik base in Turkey or from the Aviano base in Italy. In the end, NATO generals decided for airstrikes on Yugoslavia from the Aviano base. Bulgaria was saved. The burden fell on Macedonia, a small country in the Balkans which borders with Kosovo and today's Serbia. The Macedonian Prime Minister Ljupčo Georgijevski was called to a meeting with the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the United States, Madeleine Albright. The Americans wanted to have a backup option in case NATO airstrikes against Yugoslavia didn't give the desired results. Plans were already ready for ground intervention and entering of NATO forces in Belgrade and overthrowing of Slobodan Milosevic, as it was done in Iraq with Saddam Hussein. The port of Thessaloniki was already prepared to receive new NATO forces, which were prepared for a ground intervention in Kosovo. Macedonia was swarming like a beehive. The US embassy was attacked. The ambassador was saved by hiding in the basement of the embassy. NATO planes accidentally or with intention, while returning to the base in Aviano, threw bombs with depleted uranium on Macedonian territory. Everyone was relieved when the truce was signed in Kumanovo for the cease of the military operations of NATO. The Serbian army began to withdraw from Kosovo, but the bombs and the consequences of the bombing remained. Petar Škrbina was project coordinator for the production of the tank M84, which represented a particular pride of the former Yugoslav People's Army. M84 tank was used and showed excellent performance in combat during the Persian Gulf War in 1991. The ammunition with depleted uranium is used to destroy tanks and other armored vehicles. Compared to the classical ammunition, bombs with depleted uranium are more efficient and less expensive for production. That is why the ammunition with depleted uranium is more and more used in NATO combat operations. Depleted uranium is nuclear waste. There are vast reserves in the world of such nuclear waste that can be used to produce ammunition with depleted uranium. Kosovo is the youngest country in Europe. It was established after the end of the NATO intervention in Yugoslavia. The best tank and anti-aircraft units of the Army of Yugoslavia were located on the territories of Kosovo and southern Serbia. Consequently, most of the depleted uranium bombs were thrown in Kosovo and southern Serbia. NATO planes threw most of the ammunition with depleted uranium near Prizren. Prizren is an old Turkish city at the border between Kosovo and Albania. The units of the Kosovo Liberation Army, or KLA, were trained in the camps in Albania. The Army of Yugoslavia anticipated a joint attack by the units of KLA, the Albanian Army, and NATO forces from the territory of Albania. That is why the best brigades of the Army of Yugoslavia were located near Prizren. Authorities in Kosovo today do not have official figures on the number of deaths due to the Balkans cancer. The USA is the biggest ally of Kosovo. Thanks to the USA, Kosovo became an independent country. So today, in Kosovo, very little is said about the Balkans cancer because Kosovo authorities do not want to make their biggest allies, the Americans, angry. Vranje is the southernmost city in Serbia. It is located near the border with Macedonia. In case of ground intervention of NATO troops from the territory of Macedonia, the city of Vranje and its surroundings would be the front line. Therefore, the attacks of NATO planes over Vranje and its surroundings were very heavy. A lot of bombs with depleted uranium were thrown. The Institute of Nuclear Sciences Vinča was established in 1948. The Yugoslav atomic bomb was supposed to be produced in Vinča. Before the end of his life, the communist leader of Yugoslavia, Josip Broz Tito, abandoned the project for the production of an atomic bomb in Vinča. Vinča experts were involved in the research and the decontamination of the terrain around Vranje. They worked together with the representatives of UNEP, the United Nations Environment Programme. Their results, that the territory around Vranje is contaminated with depleted uranium, were subsequently confirmed by several specialized agencies which perform such analysis on behalf of the United Nations. All analyses that were made in the vicinity of Vranje showed that besides the depleted uranium ammunition, also bombs made of plutonium were thrown there. 15 years after NATO bombing in southern and central Serbia, we are witnessing a real explosion and increase of cancer. Slobodan Čikarić is president of the Cancer Association in Serbia. He started first with research of the effects of NATO bombing with depleted uranium on the health of citizens of Serbia. The results today are very disappointing. Unfortunately, the estimates are not optimistic. The silver bullet of depleted uranium will cast death in the Balkans in the next 10 years. Let's hope that the number of deaths from Balkans cancer will be lower than estimates. The NATO intervention against Yugoslavia was called Merciful Angel. It is strange how the name sometimes does lie.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. Allahumma wa as'aluka su'ala man ishtaddat faqatu wa anzala bika 'inda ash-shada'id hajata wa 'azma fi ma 'indaka raghbata. Allahumma سلطانك وعلى مكانك
وخفي مكروك وظهر أمرك وغلب قهرك وجرت قدرتك ولا يمكن الفرار من حكومتك.
As you have been previously with us, brothers and sisters, we were discussing the part where Imam Ali alayhi salam states, وَعَظُمَ فِيمَا عِنْدَكَ رَغْبَتُ. I ask you, with the asking of the one whose craving for what is with you has become intense. Regarding this part, we discussed different things, different aspects of things that can be with the Almighty Allah and the believers have to be aware of in order to be closer to Him, in order that they become more enthusiastic towards reaching the mercy of the Almighty Allah. And one of the other things that needs to be discussed is the mercy that He Himself has said about, وَرَحْمَتِي وَسِعَتْ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ. My mercy encompasses all things. Or elsewhere in the Holy Quran where it says, فَقُلْ رَبُّكُمْ ذُو رَحْمَةٍ وَاسِعَةٍ. Say, your Lord is the Lord of all encompassing mercy. So, for obtaining Almighty Allah's mercy, we should certainly observe some matters. In this regard, Imam Baghir alayhi salam has stated, تعرض للرحمة وعفو الله بحسن المراجعة. If you want to obtain Almighty Allah's mercy and forgiveness, you need to return these things to Him. واستعن على حسن المراجعة بخالص الدعاء والمناجاة في الظلم. And for realizing your return, get help from sincere praying in the middle of the night. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the believers, has these kinds of things in his mind that says, وَعَظُمَ فِيمَا عِنْدَكَ رَغْبَتُ. I ask you with the asking of the one whose craving for what is with you has become intense. These are the things that all the believers need to be aware of.
As one whose neediness is extreme, and who supplicates his needs to you, and whose desire for that which is with you has become great. O Allah, great is your kingdom, and exalted is your greatness. Your plan is secret, your authority is manifest, your might is victorious and subduing, and your power is prevalent throughout, and it is not possible to escape from your dominion. O Allah, apart from you, I do not find anyone able to pardon my sins, nor to conceal my shameful acts, nor do I have anyone except you to change my evil deeds into virtues. There is no God but you, glory and praise be to you. I have oppressed my own soul, I had the audacity to sin by my ignorance. I have relied upon my ancient remembrance of you and your grace towards me. O Allah, my Lord, how many of my ugly deeds have you concealed? How many of my grievous afflictions have you abolished? And how many stumblings of mine have you prevented? How many of my detestable acts have you averted? And how many of my undeserving praises have you spread abroad?
Thank you, Allah, God, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too.
It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable. Knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Let us have a look at one tradition from the Holy Prophet of Islam. It is told that someone asked the Prophet of Islam, I would like to get subjected to Almighty Allah's mercy. What would I do? And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, Irham nafsaka warham khalqallah yarhamkallah. Have mercy on yourself and other people so that Allah would have mercy on you. But we need to clarify once again that mercy is something different from forgiveness. Forgiveness is yet another thing that is with the Almighty Allah. Forgiveness means pardoning for the wrongdoing in order to avoid the chastisement. The Almighty Allah has said this fact for the regretful sinners who wish to return to His kingdom. And this has been placed here out of His mercy. He has admired Himself for this lofty attribute, stating, إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ عَفُوًّا غَفُورًا. Surely Allah is pardoning, forgiving. So these two are rather different things. Imam Ali alayhi salam has stated, أَمْرُهُ قَضَاءٌ وَحِكْمَةٌ. Allah's orders are obligatory and out of expedience and wisdom. وَرِضَاهُ أَمَانٌ وَرَحْمَةٌ. His satisfaction takes pleasure in mercy and forgiveness. يَقْضِي بِعِلْمٍ وَيَعْفُو بِحِلْمٍ. He rules with knowledge and awareness and forgives patiently. Imam Ali alayhi salam in this regard has stated, مَنْ تَنَزَّهَ عَنْ هُرُمَاتِ اللَّهِ سَارَعَ إِلَيْهِ عَفُو اللَّهِ. Allah's forgiveness would rush to anyone who avoids what Almighty Allah has forbidden. Some facts that are only with Almighty Allah, like reward, like paradise, like mercy and forgiveness, have inspired the pious servants intensely with the huge urge to reach what is with them. And in these recent programs, we try to touch upon these concepts. And all the believers need to be aware of these things that are with the Almighty Allah if they want to practically recite this part where Imam Ali alayhi salam says, وَعَظُمَ فِيمَا عِنْدَكَ رَغْبَتُ. We ask you, Allah, with the asking of the one whose craving for what is with you has become intense. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, if you remember, we discussed the liberation of Khorramshahr and the events related to this great juncture in the history of the Islamic Revolution and the 8-year Holy Defense. In this episode, we are going to dwell upon Imam Khomeini's ideas about the status of women in society. Stay tuned, please. One of the important issues which had occupied the minds of combatants and thinkers during the struggles against the despotic regime of Shah in Iran was the clarification of the status of women in society. Imam Khomeini was always asked by journalists on the position of women after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The father of the Islamic Revolution always tried to clarify the Islamic view, an approach towards individual, social, and political rights of women. He considered women as the core and axis of the family units and believed that if woman succeeds to achieve high grades of knowledge and spiritual and ethical values, she will be able to train children and keep the family climate more successfully. This will lead to an advanced society. The Imam was of the opinion that women's presence in family and their impact on men and children determines the course of society and the movement of mankind toward perfection and sublimity. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, strongly condemned the instrumental look of the Shah regime to women, which had trivialized them into the means of pornography and promiscuity. He would always support individual and social freedoms of women, but never agreed with turning them into the tools of meeting the carnal desires of libertine men. Imam Khomeini always called for serious and active participation of women in various scientific and cultural arenas. He said, "The Islamic culture is oppressed, and you ladies should be engaged in scientific and cultural fronts like men." Imam Khomeini's unsparing support for education and progress of women in scientific fields was quite clear in his family and personal life. While many traditional and religious strata were opposed to education of women, the Imam permitted his wife to acquire religious sciences and modern sciences. He would even help Ms. Saghafi in her courses. Ms. Saghafi says, "After receiving the diploma of the sixth grade, I went to Badriya High School and studied grade 7 there. And 2 months after starting grade 8, I chose a private teacher for French language. When my father left Qom for Tehran, I studied Jama'ul Muqaddamat with him for a while. Jama'ul Muqaddamat is the preliminary book for the students of seminaries. After marriage, Imam Khomeini would teach me. After a while, he told me that I needed no teacher as I was talented. Imam Khomeini strongly defended women's participation in political and social scenes. He maintained that the victory of the revolution was the result of the efforts and self-sacrifices of ladies. However, he believed that women's social and political activities shouldn't become superficial and ceremonial. In view of this, he vehemently opposed the special bill during the Pahlavi regime, which would give women the right to vote. As a matter of fact, the Imam was not opposed to women's right to vote. He rather considered the move to deceive people, as in those days, even men had no real right to vote, and it was only the nominees, dictated by the Shah, who could enter the parliament. Imam Khomeini would say, "Islam intends woman and man to grow. Islam has liberated women from the miseries of the era of ignorance. Islam wants to preserve women's status and respect. It wants to give position to woman to end being a tool." According to Imam Khomeini's thoughts, after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, women's social and political rights were recognized in the constitution, and many women have participated in various posts for the past decades. Presently, a notable number of the MPs are ladies, and over 60% of university students are girls. In the first years of the Islamic Republic, some backward and short-sighted persons disagreed with women's social and political participation. But Imam Khomeini stood against them and promoted the issue while preserving women's status and dignity. The Imam's wife says, "One day I heard that the Imam had sent a message to the Iranian nation and stressed that it should be read out by Ms. Maryam Riazi on TV. There was an argument on the reason for Imam's emphasis. Everyone would say something till Ahmad said, 'The main reason is to remove the problem that had occurred on IRIB.' The IRIB president says that some of the anchors were ladies and Ms. Riazi was one of them who had been an anchor since pre-revolution. She was the best female anchor. The social atmosphere in those days was against employing female anchors. But as male anchors were needed in the battlefronts, the IRIB was in shortage of anchors." Imam Khomeini had heard the issue and said that women can do the job.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en.
And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.